When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, listeners. I'm Carolina.
And I'm Tessa. And together we are Femme Regard Podcast.
Femme.
We are a show dedicated to educating and entertaining underdeveloped filmmakers and film enthusiasts alike.
We love sharing our experiences as filmmakers, what we've learned and what we've gone through.
And we love bringing on professional industry guests.
We want our listeners to learn from the best and get an honest account of the biz.
So come join the Femme Fam and give us a listen every Friday.
Streaming on all the major podcast platforms, including YouTube and our website, femregard.com. And of course, the Geekscape Network.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Before My Time. I am your host, Gelsey Laurie, and today our friend, host, and producer, Matt Kelly, is going to talk about The Little Mermaid. Dive right in. Wait, that's dumb. I just said dive right in, not let's dive in. I was just like, you dive in, I'll be on the side of the pool. Like,
okay, I'm keeping that whole thing in there.
To entertain you, we'll sing your songs for good times, the best times. You can't go wrong. We'll two-step, a new step. It won't be long when the Dixielands are playing. Soon you'll be swaying. So come on, sing along.
You know, Gelsey, I don't know about you, but The Little Mermaid is my favorite Disney animated film.
Is it?
Yeah, it's my number one. And we'll probably talk about that on the later half of this episode. But the long-awaited live-action movie is coming out, which, with the exceptions of how Flounder and Sebastian look, I'm pretty excited
for. Oh my God, I can't. When my friend sent me the Flounder photo and she's like, what the actual fuck? And I was like, actually, what the fuck? Like, what? I mean, I get it. They have to make him look like a real fish. But like, Sebastian looks like I did a shitty clay. Like, I don't know.
It's rough.
But
it's rough. It's
aside from them, it does look really good. I'm excited to see it.
But
yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, but it made me realize I've never really known what the difference is between the novel to the Disney adaptation, because God knows if you've ever read a single fairy tale that a Disney cartoon is based on, boy, are they different almost every
just
single time.
So like, they're just never happy endings. And Disney was like, nah, we're going to make this happy, which I appreciate. Let's give us some false hope. So we grow up to be adults and then we're single in our 30s and we're like, why can't I find love? Because our expectation is just impossible and we're waiting for our prince and I'm so sad and lonely. Just kidding. Okay. Anyways.
Anyway. So let's talk about The Little Mermaid. The Little Mermaid is a fairy tale from the Danish author Hans Christian Andersen, and it was published in 1837. So the basic setup of Little Mermaid, totally the same. We have a mermaid. She's little. Her dad's a widowed king. She has sisters. She goes to the surface. She sees a birthday party for the prince, and she immediately falls in love. The prince's ship crashes. She saves Prince, takes him to the shore, and then leaves, and different people come and heal him up. She makes a deal with a sea witch to gain her legs, but will lose her voice. And this is where things change. Because the cost of the deal is so much worse in the novel. I'm not sure if you've ever read the original Little Mermaid.
I haven't read it, but I do kind of know some of these key points.
So the deal is that not only will she lose her voice, but consuming the potion that the Sea Witch gives her will make her feel as if a sword is being passed through her entire body. When she finally recovers, she will have two human legs and will be able to dance like no other human has ever danced before. However, she will constantly feel as if she's walking on sharp knives every minute of the day. Moreover, she will only obtain a soul if she wins the love of the prince and marries him. For then part of his soul will flow into her. Otherwise, at the dawn of the first day after he marries someone else, the Little Mermaid will die of a broken heart and dissolve into sea foam above, on top of the waves.
I didn't know about all the broken shards, like walking on broken glass. Like,
way worse, right?
Yeah, fuck love. Like, that sounds painful.
So what happens is she gets her legs, she can't talk. She wows the prince with her dancing skills or whatever, but he never once falls in love with her. He sees her as one of his closest companions and someone he can confide in. And he vents to her when his parents try to arrange a marriage for him that he could only marry the woman who saved him when his ship sank.
She's like, that's me, but I can't tell you.
And I can't tell you. What he discovers.
She's friend-zoned. Yeah. She got friend-zoned so hard.
Instead, it's discovered that the people who came to the beach to take care of him when she brought him to the beach, that one of them was a beautiful woman who he falls for because in his mind, that is the woman who saved him. So Prince gets married to someone else. And this causes Little Mermaid's heart to start to break. Here's where the story gets fucking insane, and I'm just going to read this very long paragraph from the Wikipedia page.
Okay.
She thinks of all the things that she has sacrificed and all the pain that she has endured for this prince. She despairs, thinking that death will await her. But just before the dawn, her sisters rise out of the water and bring her a dagger that the Sea Witch has given them in exchange for their long and beautiful hair. If the mermaid kills the prince and lets his blood drip upon her feet, she will become a mermaid once more, and all of her suffering will end, and she will live out her full life in the ocean with her family. However, the mermaid cannot bring herself to stab the sleeping prince lying with his new wife, and she throws the dagger and herself off of the ship into the water just as dawn breaks. Her body dissolves into foam, but instead of ceasing to exist, she feels the warm sun and discovers that she's been turned into an ethereal, earthbound spirit, a daughter of the air. As the Little Mermaid ascends into the atmosphere, she is greeted by other daughters of the air who tell her that she has become like them because she has strove with all of her heart to obtain an immortal soul. And because of her selflessness, she has been given the chance to earn her own soul by doing good deeds for mankind over the next 300 years, which one day will grant her access to heaven. Fucking wild.
Why? Two questions. Why did Disney make any changes? They should have kept the original story. And question number two, what the fuck were they smoking in 1830, whatever? What the fuck? What?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, I knew about the sea foam. I knew she died. I knew that. But that was actually it. And okay. And the sisters, like, they sacrificed their hair for nothing. I'd be pissed if I was them. I'd be like, I chopped awesome mermaid golden locks off for you, and you didn't even fucking kill him? Fuck you.
The ending has clearly been a source of criticism. One of the most famous people who spoke out against it was P.L. Travers, who wrote Mary Poppins. The author of Mary Poppins. She said, "The final message of this book is more frightening than anything ever presented in the tale. The story descends into some type of Victorian moral tale written for children to scare them into being in good behavior. Hans Christian Andersen, this is childhood blackmail."
I was going to ask, I was like, what's the moral of the story here? Like, settle down your teenage hormones. You think you're in love, but you're really not. And you're going to die if you go for it. Like, wait till you're fully grown. I don't know. Like,
crazy.
Clearly Ariel is a teen. What? She's 16, right?
She's 16. In the movie, here's the other thing. She has never given a name. She is just the Little Mermaid throughout the telling of the story. Ariel was the first time the character had a name. And that was in the 1989 Disney adaptation. Before that, it was always just referred to as the Mermaid. Some people actually think that some people liked the ending. They felt like the ending was leading towards your typical tragic ending, but ends with a hopeful success. that seems very intentional towards Hans Christian Andersen's skepticism towards physical and religious symbolism, while others think that the story is just a natural part of like a religious allegory or something along those lines. I just think it's a bad ending.
It's a terrible, she should have just died and been like, and that's tragedy. Instead of, then they're like, then she becomes a ethereal, like that. I was like, okay, if you do good for man, as how, as a spirit,
as
like,
the spirit of the air,
because she was selfless. How was she selfless? By not killing the prince.
Yeah,
but she wasn't selfless when she didn't kill the prince in lieu of her sister's hair.
Well, and this
I'm
is
really
the
caught
thing
up on that sacrifice that the sisters made, and she just,
well, this is something that I stumbled onto. So while I was doing the research, I was reading about some of the controversy based around the Disney adaptation, and really the controversy could dwindle all the way down to the original story, which is like Little Mermaid, as much as I like this movie, not a great message to kids, which is like, when you're 16 and fall in love, abandon your friends, abandon your family, focus exclusively on your looks. Like it's like, it is kind of just like a fuck everybody who's backed you. Just give your entire everything to this stranger who you've never spoken to. And also, you don't even need to talk. Who cares about your personality? Just be pretty and he'll fall in love with you.
I know. That's what it really is. I used to think that too, watching The Little Mermaid. When I got a little older, obviously as a kid, yeah, you don't really understand the whole like, daddy, I love him. Like, yeah. And like leaving. But it is. She's a teenager and just like full on makes his abandonment for someone she doesn't know. But you know what, Matt? It happens every day.
It does. It does. So did you know that the Disney adaptation that we know and love is the third adaptation of The Little Mermaid?
What? No,
yes.
I didn't know that.
And I'm sure that there are others, but these were the three main ones that were brought up. First of all, Shirley Temple had an anthology children's series in the 50s and early 60s called The Shirley Temple School Storybook, where she would recreate famous fairy tales. So in this one, Temple played the mermaid. Now, unlike the original story, this is very interesting to me because they don't tell me what she did give up. It just said, unlike the original story, the mermaid does not give up her voice to become human. But it doesn't say what she does, in fact, give up, which seems like a pretty major plot point. But it's like, I guess you're like, we got Shirley Temple. She ain't not talking. But she still fails to win the princess's heart, or the prince's heart, at the end of this story. When he falls in love with the princess that found him. In the end, when she cannot bring herself to kill the prince with the dagger, she prepares her to throw herself into the ocean. Then Neptune himself intervenes and says that for her selfless act, she has earned the right to become a mermaid again and rejoin her family, giving the story a happy ending. I love that the Shirley Temple storybook ending still involves her having to murder the prince.
She's like older. Have you seen these photos?
No, I mean 61 does seem older for her. Yeah, she was big in the 30s, I mean, right?
Yeah, like it's because I was like, they can't put a child, and then I was like, oh my god, 61. I was like, oh my god, she's like 20 something, or like, how old was she?
Well, because she may have been in her 30s or 40s, because I thought that she was a hit in the 30s.
She was a hit in the 30s, but she was like 5. She was a baby.
But this
girl
is 61.
This is 61. Okay, wait. Simple math. Cast.
When was she born?
That's what I'm looking up. 1928.
Okay.
So 61.
So she was like 33 years old.
Oh my god. She's like my age. What?
You could be the Little Mermaid.
No, I grew up on Shirley Temple, but like the 30s Shirley, yeah, Temple, which was like one of the reasons I wanted to be a little child star, because I saw Shirley Temple tap dancing and I was like, my mom would always like curl my hair and I'd be like curly top. Anyways.
Yeah, wild, right? Like
wild. It's so interesting to see her as an adult even.
Then there was a second adaptation in 1976 that was a Russian adaptation. In this one, she trades her hair for the legs.
Yes, I've heard that. What is up with this like hair shit? Like,
I don't know. And then this
hair
is
was very valuable.
So in the Hans Christian Andersen book, the stuff that I read, it didn't really say how she connected with the sea witch. My assumption is that just everyone knew about the sea witch. So she went to her. But in the Russian film, she meets a traveling handyman who introduces her to the witch. And then at the end of the story, when the prince marries the local princess and the mermaid is destined to die that day, it's the traveling handyman who challenges the prince to a fight and is killed. And it's his sacrifice that spares the mermaid from death and allows her soul to become eternal.
Is this handyman a human then? Like, does she meet him like while he's boating across the ocean and she's all bloop, hey, what's up? And he's like, oh shit, a mermaid. Hey, what's up? Let's
check it out.
Like, what? Or was he like scuba diving? Maybe he was like,
I'm assuming yes, that it's a human. And my assumption is that in the Disney film, maybe he's essentially what like Scuttle became a little bit, because
brilliant.
Yeah,
yes,
that's my
so
guess
smart.
There.
I forgot about Scuttle. Yeah.
So the final thing I want to talk about is obviously the Disney Little Mermaid, because if you're a diehard Disney fan, you know this. If you're a lukewarm Disney fan, you might not know. But the Little Mermaid was actually one of Walt Disney's earliest feature film concepts. He had planned to do a package film that was going to feature vignettes of all of the Hans Christian Andersen stories. But the development in the 30s really started to delay for various different circumstances. And it wasn't until 1985 when Ron Clements became interested in a film adaptation of The Little Mermaid when he was directing The Great Mouse Detective. He believed that the story provided the ideal basis for a feature film, and he was really excited about creating a film that would take place underwater. While they were in production in the 1980s, the staff, by chance, stumbled upon the original visual and story development work that was done in the 30s for The Little Mermaid, and they were shocked to find out that a lot of the changes that they had made for the 1980 film had already been made by the staff in the 1930s as well.
Oh, wow. So it was like the same changes, and they were like, we must all work for Disney.
Yeah, they're like, oh, we're in the same headspace.
I mean, yeah, obviously there was going to have to be some massive changes.
Yeah, for sure. And we will talk about the Little Mermaid cartoon after this quick commercial break.
Hi, listeners. I'm Carolina.
And I'm Tessa. And together we are Femme Regard Podcast.
Femme.
We are a show dedicated to educating and entertaining underdeveloped filmmakers and film enthusiasts alike.
We love sharing our experiences as filmmakers, what we've learned and what we've gone through.
And we love bringing on professional industry guests.
We want our listeners to learn from the best and get an honest account of the biz.
So come join the Femme Fam and give us a listen every Friday.
Streaming on all the major podcast platforms, including YouTube and our website, FemmeRegard.com. And of course, the Geekscape Network.
You've been lost in the woods for hours now, stumbling around in the dark. You come around the bend and see two people roasting marshmallows over a roaring fire. They see you coming into the clearing and gesture over to pull up a log. Welcome to Campfire Ashes. I'm Paul.
And I'm Jess. Join us as we tell each other our originally written spooky stories around the campfire and then dive into the lore and legends that inspired them. Is it something that goes bump in the night? Is it something menacing lurking past the tree line? Or is it just weird and otherworldly? You'll find it here on Campfire Ashes.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, or right here on the Geekscape Network.
Like I said in the beginning of the episode, Little Mermaid has always been one of my favorite Disney anything. I would always rank it as my number one Disney cartoon, not just because I think it's beautifully done, but I have made the statement before that I think of all of the Disney films throughout the entire history of Disney, that The Little Mermaid has both the best I want song in any Disney movie with Part of Your World and the best villain song with Poor Unfortunate Souls.
Ursula's kind of, I'm drinking out of my Tinkerbell coffee cup right now, but yesterday was my Ursula coffee cup. She's my favorite villain.
Oh, she's great.
We actually, for the 100th year anniversary at Disneyland, we got new name tags and we got to pick our favorite Disney character from like a drop-down list. And so normally it says your name in your hometown, and mine says Ursula, because I was like, I'm gonna pick Ursula.
Nice.
I do love her.
If I'm not one for karaoke, but if I'm with the right crowd and I see that Poor Unfortunate Souls is an option for karaoke, I'll do it.
Is that one of your?
Oh my God.
I would love to see that.
I mean, I can give you a little bit of do you want to hear a little presentation of me singing for it? Absolutely. I admit that in the past I've been a nasty. They weren't kidding when they called me well a witch. Well, I find that nowadays I've mended all my ways, repented, seen the light, and made a switch. True, yes.
Oh, this is great. I love how he said, I was like, I'd love to see this. Would you like to? I admit that. Like, not even a beat. It's funny. I think I like Ursula. That is a song that I've thought about singing a lot, be it for just my shower time. Because she has a very deep voice, and yeah. I have a very deep voice. I'm like, I relate to you.
She has, but the other thing I like about that is to throw it back to an episode we did almost a year ago. The music to Poor Unfortunate Souls has a very cabaret vibe to it.
Like, cabaret was almost a year ago?
Yeah, we recorded that in the summer of last year.
Holy shit.
But you know what I mean? Like the way that it's like that boom, dun, dun, boom, dun, boom.
It does. It does. Yeah. Poor unfortunate soul.
That's the mashup you need to do, is you need to find the music for cabaret, but sing for poor
and sing poor unfortunate souls.
Or Vilkum. I get a Vilkum in is what you
get. Oh, that's Vilkum. Yeah. fantastic. I love it. I always joke that, you know how they're doing all like the prequel villain movies now, like Cruella and Maleficent and this, that. I'm like, I want them to do one on younger Ursula. And
yes.
I think that'd be perfect for her. I think I would be a great young Ursula.
So I want to tell you the other music thing that I figured out, because I'm a music nerd and I listen to Disney music and Broadway music constantly, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the people who wrote the music for Little Mermaid got the gig because the people at Disney were a huge fan of their previous Broadway hit, which was Little Shop of Horrors, right?
Duh. Oh, I didn't realize that that was before, because I know that he wrote Little Shop of Horrors, but is that how – it's Alan Menken, right?
Yeah. That's how he got his foot in the door.
That's how he got into Disney, was because of Little Shop of Horrors?
Yep. So here's the thing that when I realized this, it blew my mind, and I will – the listeners are getting a lot of singing, Matt, today, but part of your world has the exact same ending as Somewhere That's Green. Sudden.
Oh, yeah.
Because part of your world ends, she's like, Somewhere That's Green is in my head right now. She goes, far from Skid Row, I dream we'll go somewhere that's green.
Dude, mind blown.
And that is absolutely how part of your world.
Yes. It's 1,000%. Oh my God. I want to hear Audrey sing Part of Your World.
Oh, I'm sure Ellen Green's pipes would crush that.
Where the people go.
Oh my God. You're nailing it.
Like, I know. I'm really good. We used to have like these choir barbecue end of the year, and like you could do little performances, and there was a group of us that did Skid Row. And I did her part.
Well, the thing that always blows me away, because we're on a little bit of an Ellen Green tangent, but I'll follow it. The thing that always blows me away is that she does have that meek, mousy voice. But then when you get to like Suddenly Seymour.
Oh my God. Suddenly Seymour. Like, so I'm like, what the fuck? Yeah. I love it. Like, she's perfect for that part. I always love, yes, yes, doctor.
This is like low-key the best impression you've ever done.
You didn't know. Yeah, I'm pretty good at her in Little Shop of Horrors. I don't know why. It's just that's why, yeah, when we did Skid Row, I was like, I have to do her. And I did not have the best voice, and I do not have anywhere near like the capabilities of singing her parts. No business. But I was like, I can sound like her. Yeah, she's incredible. And I don't want to go off on Little Shop of Horrors. And I love the movie so much.
Yeah. Oh, it's a masterpiece. But that I mean,
we've talked about Rick Moranis. Yeah. But wow, Alan Menken, I didn't realize that that was his foot in the door. Because obviously when I think about him, I think about Disney movies.
Yeah.
And yeah, all I mean, the amazing work he's done. What other musical
did he do that was
wasn't Disney after?
It was him and Howard Ashman were the duo from Little Shop of Horrors. They did all of Little Mermaid, and they were working on Aladdin. And that's when Howard Ashman unfortunately died of AIDS before he ever saw the ending of... he was working on Aladdin. This is what it was. Howard Ashman wanted to make Aladdin. Disney wanted to make Beauty and the Beast. And the agreement was that if he wrote the songs for Beauty and the Beast, they would do Aladdin. And he passed away just as they had finished Beauty and the Beast and were starting to do Aladdin. So you'll notice that like Beauty and the Beast and Little Mermaid are Alan Menken and Howard Ashman scores. Aladdin is Alan Menken with Howard Ashman and Tim Rice, because he passed away before he could finish the songs, and Tim Rice came in to finish them. And then Menken and Tim Rice worked together on a ton of Disney movies from that point on. I'm sure Menken has done the Broadway adaptations of the Disney stuff, but I think he's kind of been just like Disney's go-to dude for everything.
Like,
Lin-Manuel's like coming for his coming for his seat now.
Hunchback, Hercules, which is my favorite, Tangled, Enchanted. Like, there's nothing. It's crazy.
Yeah. And you mentioned it already, and I think it's finally coming, but we have done, back in the day, my friends Brooke and Andrew, who you know from the Roaring Twenties podcast, we used to do a Disney podcast, and we had our friend Gleefully Tim on, and our thing was make a Disney Broadway musical that hasn't already been done, and we all agreed that Hercules is the one that is just, like, demanding to happen. Like,
oh, yeah, that one's, I think like, they are, if I'm not.
They're working, they are finally working on it now. This was, like, 10 years ago we did it.
That's been, like, I've been saying that for years as well, because I just think the big routines you could get. I love Hercules so much. It also, I always talk about Hercules and Mulan are probably my top favorites, but the time they came out in the 90s and the age I was,
it was perfect for you. Yeah,
the impressionable age where I was like, cool, I am now Mulan and Meg wrapped up in one. Yeah. And well,
Meg
wrong?
And I've said that Meg is my Meg is like my number one cartoon crush, I would say. Like, I'm always I'm searching for a real life Meg in my life, but like, also low-key, I Won't Say I'm in Love is the best Disney song that no one talks about. Like, that song
I love that song. I sang it for an audition one time because I was like, I'm going to sing. I was like really young. But Hercules is a golden gem, and that song is such a good song.
So, Gelsey, if people are like, you could have done more. You could have talked about The Little Mermaid more. I'm sick of you talking about 90s Disney films. Those aren't before your time. Your podcast sucks. Like, don't contact us. But if you have good things that you want to say about us, how can they go about letting us know?
No, I can take it. Tell us how shitty we are on Instagram. You can find us at beforemytime_podcast or search Before My Time on Facebook. We will pop up. Message us, DM us, write on our wall. Comment on our latest post. Let us know how fucking shitty we are, because we'd just love to hear that, you know? And on that note, if you disagree with that statement, we would love if you gave us a review real quick. 5 stars would be cool, but it gets us into more ears of listeners like yourself. That was a sentence that makes sense. Go with it. We're sticking to it. Thanks so much for tuning in, you guys, and see you next week. Bye.
I'm Carolina.
And I'm Tessa. And together we are Femme Regard Podcast.
Femme.
We are a show dedicated to educating and entertaining underdeveloped filmmakers and film enthusiasts alike.
We love sharing our experiences as filmmakers, what we've learned and what we've gone through.
And we love bringing on professional industry guests.
We want our listeners to learn from the best and get an honest account of the biz.
So come join the Femme Fam and give us a listen every Friday.
Streaming on all the major podcast platforms, including YouTube and our website, femregard.com. And of course, the Geekscape Network.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.